else that you can throw in there.
Hi, everybody. I'm Molly, compulsive overeater and bulimic.
Hi, Molly.
I am really happy to be here. We were joking, though, that it was it's so not an ego thing today because I'm just not wasn't the first choice. It's okay. But I, just so, and then, so if I suck it, I'm okay, though, right? Because I'm pitching. Okay. So I'm actually going to even screw things up even more because I'm going to start with three. Tradition three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. I needed to start with this tradition today because I needed to apply it so that I could get here. Basically, my whole life, the last 7 months, has been a different focus than I could ever have imagined. My husband was diagnosed with cancer, and my whole focus and my whole family's focus has been that treatment, how to deal with it, everything. And so for me to come here today, I was like, well, I have to talk about that. And I've even talked about this in meetings. It's been hard for me to go to meetings and share openly because I thought people are so, I'm sure, so sick of hearing about that. Nobody wants to hear more about that. That is just, you know, you need to stop talking about that, Molly. That isn't why you're here. But the problem is that it, since it is who I am today, it has been my focus that I had to apply this tradition so that I'm okay to be here and talk about that. I am who I am, and this is who I am because this is what I've lived, period. And so that's why I have to start with tradition three. Because it was how I even had to prepare last night. It was like, I was like, I gotta call my sponsor. I can't do this because I'm going to an OA meeting, but I know I'm gonna talk about this. Well, I have to, because it is. And so tradition three in my life applied today is how I got here, how I share at meetings these days, because In the reality, what really happened when I opened up and said, this is what's going on in my life, what the exact opposite thing actually happened. I thought people were going to go away. I'd go to my home meeting and no one would be there because they were so sick of me talking. And actually, the opposite happened. People came and my whole world just opened up and people surrounded me and got me through it. And so that lie I told myself, that this tradition helps me get through those lies, and that I can never be too crazy, too fat, too dependent, too scared, you fill in the blank, you know, it doesn't matter. You're welcome in OA, and you're welcome in this world because you are who you are. I am who I am. I've done what I've done. I've been through what I've been through, and I'm here, and I'm okay to be here because I'm a human being. And that's how this tradition, I have to start with this tradition. So that's why I'm sitting here today, and I'm okay to talk now. So I'm going to go back to one. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. So there's two ways that I have to apply this, in the big picture of my world and in the daily parts of my world. Like the daily activities that go on. I'm going to start the big picture is that I've spent all of my life, how am I going to get my needs met? This is what I want. What about me? I've just been so self-centered, and that has been an obsession. I mean, ultimately, an obsession of mine. How am I going to get what I want and what I need? And this tradition really has helped me get out of that. And it hasn't been really until 7 months ago when my husband was diagnosed and my whole world was flipped upside down that I really got to apply this tradition, really learned what it was about. And also because when I came into OA, I was single. I really had no people in my life except for maybe a couple of family members that could maybe still tolerate me. I didn't really have friends. I had a cat. You know, I mean, that was really my bottom line. And so I was just me anyway, so I didn't really interact in the world. I mean, I tried to at work. You know, that was pretty hard. I got written up a lot at work. You know, I just couldn't get along with people. I just didn't understand at all. I mean, I only could see me and not past my nose. And But it when I did get married and have children in this in program, then I had to start applying this tradition a little bit more. And like, it was easier to see that. Then my family kind of became the group, you know, in my personal life. And so I had to start thinking about my whole family, that unit, as what benefits them versus just what I want and need. And again, I thought if I'm just always seeking what I need, what I want, if I just continue to do that, that's what it's how it's gonna I'm gonna get what I need and want. And the actual opposite happened. When I put my family's needs first, and I basically so then when I put my family's needs first, and there were a lot of needs that my family had this last 7 months. Now, I had needs. I personally had needs. That's not a question. But I could not sit and wonder how I was going to get those needs met. I had to sit and think about my two younger children and my husband, and then some extended family around too that were really hurting. And how could we get through this? My husband's mom, I had to think about them. I had to think about and how they came first. My first instinct was to immediately just pass my children on to her because I know that they'd be taken care of, and I could be with my husband, and that wasn't okay, though, because she needed to be with her son, too. And so even though it was a balancing thing. You have to balance, you know. She needed to be with her son, but my children needed to be taken care of, and I needed to be with my husband. You know, there was like all these things. And so now I'm going to tradition 2, because I had to go, God, what is the right way to handle the situation? What the ultimate authority is God to handle the situation. How do we juggle this? And answers came, and people came. And like I said, my world was opened up, and people took my children, and I could go to the hospital, and we came up with shifts for us that we could be at the hospital with Dan at different times, and you know, it just everything worked out because I didn't sit and stew over what my needs were, and my needs were ultimately always taken care of. 1 second before I needed it, everything was there. 1 second. Sometimes before I even knew I needed it, it was given to me. And I absolutely was not about me taking care of my needs. It absolutely got me out of my selfishness. More daily things. My brother had a football game Thursday night, and he's a freshman in high school, and it's a really cool thing to go see him do it. I love to go watch him play football. He's good. He's tall. He's big. It's fun. It's like, oh. And I wanted to go Thursday night so bad. And last Thursday night, I wanted to go so bad. And last Thursday night, Dan said, and there wasn't anything else going on, and there's two different, I'm going to give you two examples of how I use God's will, how this was a successful time, and how I didn't do it so successfully. This week, Dan said to me, let's talk about that you want to go. He lives in Lincoln, so we'd have to drive to Lincoln, that's gas money. Don't have a lot of gas, don't have a lot of money. And you're going to get home late, the kids are going to they're going to go to bed late, they're going to be crabby. They're not going to get the sleep they need. And he said, Thursday night was a cancer walk for him, and he really wanted us to go. And I was like, and I had to just stop and go, what is the right thing for my family? You know, the welfare of my family here, I have to put away. I didn't do it gracefully. I didn't do it, I was kicking and fighting inside. But I was like, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely 100% right that it wasn't the right thing to do is go to that football game. It's fine. I needed to be where I needed to be. Last Thursday, the same kind of, we had a conversation, we're so busy. You have to put gas, you know, we don't have the money, blah, blah, blah. And I knew intuitively I shouldn't have gone, and I went anyway. And, I mean, I knew it wasn't the right thing for my family. We had a horrible, miserable time, and I didn't get to enjoy the game at all. And so, you know, I certainly don't always get this figured out. It is hard to apply the traditions in my life. It is absolutely hard to apply them. It's hard to figure out, you know, to balance all the traditions. Because, you know, we're going to talk later that there's autonomy. Autonomy says, I can get in my car and go to this football game. No, because it really would have been detrimental to my family Thursday. In tradition, too, so I talked a little bit about how I apply that, you know, how I have to use a higher power, that ultimate authority. And kind of how I've divided it is like I have to use step three for God's will for me and step and tradition three for God's will for my family, if that makes sense at all. Kind of how to divide it for myself. And then I also have to, well, and the deal is too that other people have been given gifts and I've been given gifts that I can use and that other people can use. And sometimes, this has been a hard one too, I'm not the one in charge. I'm not the one leading. I'm not the one. And, you know, that's been huge in my relationship with my husband and my marriage, because we've had power struggle after power struggle after power struggle over this. And we've come a long way by, you know, I don't know his side of it, but I know that I absolutely had to start going, he has a gift in this area. Shut up. You know, let him do this. He can drive. He's a very good driver. I am a horrible driver. It's just factual now, you know. I can tell you 9 accidents I've been in, he's been in 0. You know? I mean, and then, you know, recently, too, in my family, I grew up where my grandmother always led us in prayer. And my grandmother was always the head of the house. And we've kind of started to add prayer into, like, with my children and trying to teach them prayer at meal times and to pray when we need to pray and stuff. And my instinct was to lead us in prayer. And I'm not as good as my husband at it. He can just say this most beautiful, heartfelt, straight to God prayer. And it just brings me to tears when he does it. And so I'm at the head of this household when it comes to prayer, you know? He is. He just simply is. So now I'm just kind of trying to come up with a couple of things that happen, you know, daily life, and then some things in bigger picture. And I have absolutely no idea how much time I've used, but I'm done. So.
Thank you.
Barb's up next.
All righty, I'm 4 through 6. Just call me 4 through 6. Okay. The fourth tradition is that each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting OA as a whole. So I just have a bunch of little notes. I'll do my best to get through them. One thing that I read when I was reviewing the traditions is that it said, we are asked to be obedient to the unenforceable. And I like that, because the traditions aren't, like, enforcing the traditions in and of themselves is a violation of the traditions, right? So I just kind of like that idea, because they give me guidelines to follow, and I have this option to follow them. And in fact, in tradition 4, I mean, it's autonomous. Every group gets to make their own decisions. Me as myself, I get to make my own decisions. Of course, there's always that caveat of, you know, accepting matters that affect OA as a whole. So to me, that's just basically, it gives me the freedom to do what I want to do, but I also have the responsibility to make sure that I'm not harming other people in the process of that. So one of the things I thought about was, like, there's kind of 4 aspects of this tradition that I run into trouble with. The first thing is that I have to be autonomous. This means that I have to kind of give up that idea of being people-pleasing. I often have this instinct that I just want to blend in with the crowd and be like everybody else. I don't want to make my own decision. I want to follow somebody else's decision, or I don't want to stand out in the crowd even if I'm not comfortable, because that's more uncomfortable to somehow have to speak up and be the voice of difference or whatever. Or I think maybe a better example is like just in matters like at home and being with family, it's I want to always do everything with the exact same people that I'm always really comfortable with. But I have to be autonomous. I can't, everything in my life that I do can't be with somebody else. Because what if that person doesn't want to do something? Like, I missed this opportunity to do something just because I can't fit it into a schedule of somebody else. So that's something that I struggle with in figuring out how to be autonomous. Is, you know, if I want to go to, you know, a different meeting, but it's on a night that we are always hanging out together as a family, my instinct is to not. Like, I just want to go with the flow, go with what's easy, go with what's comfortable. And I struggle with learning how to be autonomous on my own and just going and doing something that's different that, you know, inside in my gut I want to go do. So that would be one side of it. But again, I have to do it in a way that doesn't affect others. So I have to be careful that when I'm making these decisions to do things on my own or independently, that I'm not, you know, messing with other people's plans. So if we only have one car in the house, and I'm the one who decides I'm going to go to a meeting tonight because that's different, and then nobody else gets to go do anything because I've made that decision unilaterally, that's where that caveat of having the freedom but the responsibility not to harm others kind of comes into play. So in that respect, I guess the character defect or whatever that pops in my way in that respect is my need to want to be controlling. I want to control what other people do, too. You know, I want to make sure that other people aren't doing more than they should, taking more than they should, spending longer than they should. I mean, that's kind of my internal hall monitor that I have that wants to make sure everybody else is always following the rules, because I have to. So if I'm going to follow the rules, everybody should have to follow the rules too. So that's kind of that. My instinct is to want to control things and control that environment. So I kind of have to watch out for that, because although I get to be autonomous, I get to choose to follow the rules if I want to or not. It's not my job to make sure everybody else is following the rules. Kind of on the flip side of all of that, though, is kind of respecting other people's side of it. I have to let other people be autonomous. That kind of goes into the, some of it is controlling, some of it's kind of that codependency of wanting to do things for other people, make life easier for them, be the hero, you know, who comes in and fixes things. I have to let other people be autonomous. They get to make their own mistakes. They get to decide, I don't want to follow the rules today. If we're driving on the road and someone else wants to speed and drive like crazy, it's not my job to slow down in front of them to try and make them follow the speed limit. I want to do that, you know. I would love to be able to do it, because if I'm going to go the speed limit, you're going to go the speed limit, right? That's kind of my instinct that I want to do, but it's not my job. I think one of the hardest things that I struggle with the traditions is the fact that it is a choice. Like, we're asked to obey the unenforceable. It is really hard to live in compliance with these sets of rules when the people that you might be interacting with aren't. And they don't have to. Nobody says they have to. I would say 3/4 of the people in my life don't even know about them, don't care about them, and certainly aren't going to follow them, least of all upon my instruction. But one of the things that I heard a speaker say once that I really liked was he was talking about it kind of in the terms of honesty, and steps in general, but one of the things he said was that early on in program, he used to do things in order to get things back. Like he would be honest because he wanted people to be honest with him. And he would be kind because he wanted people to be kind to him. And it was kind of this idea that, you know, if I do this, then other people will reciprocate back. And what he learned, and what I learned by listening to him, is that that's not really how it works in program. When I'm an honest person, when I practice honesty, when I tell the truth to people, I'm an honest person. It doesn't get me honesty in return. If I'm kind, it doesn't get me kindness in return. What it gets me is I get to be an honest person. I get to be a kind person. And so when it comes to the traditions, my hall monitor just wants to ensure that if I'm going to follow this rule, I'm going to get compliance by everyone else too. And that's just not how it works. I have to remind myself that I do this because I want to be a better person. It's not about what I'm going to get back. So with the fourth tradition, it's like, I want to be autonomous so I can be an autonomous person and so that I can let other people be autonomous as well. You know, I get to make mistakes. I get to learn from my mistakes. Other people have the right to make mistakes and to learn from them. And, you know, I always want to be the wise person and tell people, oh, you shouldn't be doing that because this is the lesson you're going to learn, particularly in the way of teenagers. I'd love to tell a teenager everything that they need to learn. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to know it. It's not my job anyway. And I just have to remember that they get to be autonomous. They get to make their own decisions, even if it's wrong. It's not my place to correct them. Then the last side of this tradition is kind of the idea of there's always the caveat, except in matters affecting OA as a whole. There are times when other people are going to make a decision that's going to affect the group as a whole. I don't always like, as much as I like to be the hall monitor, there are times where I don't want to have to be the person who's going to speak up and say, that's going to affect the household as a whole, you know, or that's going to affect work, it's going to affect everything as a whole. You know, there might be times where I see somebody on the road who's not following the traffic laws, and I think, that person's drunk, that person's going to kill someone. You know, that's when, you know, it's always about trying to figure out the boundaries, because everything is such a gray area. I want everything to be black and white, because that's neat, and it's easy to figure out, and it's clean, and whatever. But there are times where you only get to be autonomous so far, and there are times where you have to be that person who's going to step up and say, I don't think this is right. I don't, you know, now you've crossed the line where you're going into, this is going to affect the group as a whole, and I don't, it's hard to set boundaries in that respect often. You know, I don't want to be the one at home necessarily who's going to say, now this is affecting it the whole and this has to stop. Because, you know, it's kind of complicated because sometimes I want to be so controlling and my homeowner wants to peep in, and other times it's like, it's the last thing I want to do is have to open my mouth and say something, and it always seems like the one that needs to come out is the one that doesn't want to come out. So, you know, if my gut instinct is to jump all over it, that's probably when I shouldn't. You know, I know we've heard that before in program where people are always saying, first thought wrong, that tends to be relatively accurate for me. So, of course I'm not following my notes at all. One of the things I wrote down is autonomy is comes from the idea of being self-governing, and then the whole accept in matters, that's kind of, to me, that's where I consult with my higher power. So, you know, on the autonomy side of it, I have to be self-governing, I have to, you know, tell myself what I need to do, follow what my gut says I need to do. The accepted matters affecting others, that's where I have to consult my higher power and kind of say, you know, where are these lines? Because it's not clear where the lines are. So, that's probably about it. One of the other things I kind of wrote down is when it comes to sponsees, it's the same thing. I'm not governing of my sponsees. They get to be autonomy. They get to do, you know, what they want, work their program how they want to work. as a sponsor, all I can do is kind of point them to their higher power. So that's another area in my life where I see this tradition coming into play a lot. You know, I have to be autonomous in my own program, my sponsees have to be autonomous in their own program, except in matters as it affects OA as a whole, which is, you know, coming to program and sharing my experience. I don't get to dictate what, you know, it means to do step three to anyone. So, you know, and my responsibility on that end is to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. But I do it within the confines of what's acceptable in OA, which is the steps and the traditions. I don't get to bring in, you know, whatever I read in some other book that has absolutely nothing to do with program. So anyway, that's one other thing I wrote down. The fifth tradition is each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the still suffering compulsive eater. The way I apply this to my life, there's kind of two things, like when Molly was talking about, I think, the first tradition, like, there's kind of that broader, big picture level, and then there's that everyday kind of approach. On a broader level, I try to think of this as, with the traditions, I often kind of give one key word that hits the tradition that kind of reminds me what it is. So like with the fourth tradition, it's autonomy. With this one, it's the one word of primary purpose. But, you know, on a broader level, I like to think of my primary purpose as carrying the message of recovery. Even though that is recovery in nature, that applies to my life as a whole, because within that concept of recovery is the steps and the traditions. And the steps is kind of that concept of, you know, being honest about what my part is in something, making amends where I hurt other people, kind of the principles of honesty and kindness and like all the principles that come in with the traditions, like unity, taking in consideration other people, all those things encompass recovery as a whole. So to me, on a really big scale, I think of my primary purpose as trying to carry the message of recovery. And I can do this by living the message, which is just being that person that I want to have, and then sharing my experience, strength, and hope. That's pretty much the only way I can carry the message. Simply being an example of it as best as I can, and then sharing how, like, what my experience is, but not pushing. And I know that gets into another tradition about the whole attraction, not promotion kind of thing, not promoting. I mean, I can't push the message onto people. I can't, you know, and there's that hall monitor again. I want to tell everyone, this is how you should be. This is, you know, what it means to follow the traditions. I can't do that. I just have to say, you know, is by sharing honestly in meetings. And the same stuff all applies at work. I can't force people to be any particular ways. All I can do is behave honestly at work. You know, I can go there with that idea of, and this kind of gets into the smaller scale of the primary purpose, is kind of defining in any given event what my primary purpose is for that day. So if I go to work, I can say, what is my primary purpose today? Well, my primary purpose today is to be of service to my employer and to do my job. It's not to go and gossip. It's not to go and surf the internet all day. It's not to watch my coworker and see if she's doing her job, you know, or go, I mean, all these things that come and get in the way during the day. If I stay focused, what is my primary purpose here? I'm going to stay out of trouble. I'm going to have a better day. I'm going to be a better person. I'm going to be more in line with what it is that I want, like when I step back. Because when I'm in this situation, I want to gossip. And I want to surf the internet. And I want to, you know, hall monitor what my next door neighbor is doing. I want to do that. But before I go in, when I'm not in the situation, that's when I can identify what is my primary purpose in this situation. And if I do those things, I guarantee you at the end of the day, when I get out of the situation, I'm going to be happier with myself. I'm going to be more comfortable with myself. and more at peace, because I know I did what I was supposed to do. At the end of the day, if I've spent my day gossiping and surfing the internet, I go home stressed because I didn't get stuff done that I know I need to get done, and it's just kind of that internal ick feeling that I'll have. So another example would be, and that's kind of like an everyday thing. I also find primary purpose particularly helpful if I'm going into a unusual, unexpected circumstance. Like if I'm going to a funeral, I haven't gone to a lot of funerals in my life. I don't really know what to do in a funeral. I don't know how to behave. I want to do what's right. I want to be a good person. So it's helpful for me to identify beforehand what's my primary purpose in this situation. Maybe it's, you know, to show my friend loving and support and let her know that I'm here. That's helpful, because then I go to this funeral and it's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know half the people there. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to, you know, interact with people. Then I can look back to my primary purpose. Oh, yes, it's to show love and support. I'm going to go over to my friend. I'm going to give her a hug, and I'm going to tell her I'm really sorry for your losses. You know, let me know if there's anything I can do for you. That guideline kind of helps me know what to do when I'm in the situation, because when I get all kind of, the word I want to use is not something I can use. Is there another word for clusterfuck?
I think you said it now.
It's quiet, right? When my head gets all chaotic and crazy,
befuddled.
Befuddled is a fabulous word. When I get all befuddled on the inside, that's not a good time for me to be making decisions. And I just know from experience that thinking about it beforehand, giving some thought to it, having an actual plan of things I can say, things I can do, then when I get in that situation and I'm all befuddled on the inside, I can just do it. You know, it's like, oh, I have instructions. I have something I can do, and that kind of gets me through. Let's see. I wrote that it can be helpful to think of working my program as my primary purpose. That is very helpful because it keeps the focus on myself. The whole idea behind program is to, you know, when you're looking at your resentments, you turn it around and look at what your part is in it. You know, when you're figuring out if you have to make amends, it's figuring out where you've done harm. Those kinds of things are just turn the focus and look back at me, because I always want to look at what everyone else is doing everywhere. So it's very helpful for me to think of my primary purpose is to work my program, which is mind my own business. Look inside myself and focus on me and not what everybody else is doing. I find that I get in less trouble when I when I use that as my guideline. I also have on here, sometimes it can be more about what my primary purpose is not rather than what it is. My primary purpose is not to bestow judgment on everybody at work or at program or at home. I like to do it at home. It is not to boss people around or instruct them or criticize. Those are kinds of things I have to remember. That's not my primary purpose. And so then when I look at myself and it's like, well, have I spent my entire day judging and criticizing people? Okay, guess what? That's not my primary purpose. I am not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Okay, sixth tradition. I have 5 minutes left. Which is probably 4 now. OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Some of these traditions are harder to apply to your life than others, particularly if the only thing you read is the tradition itself. If you read the book, the whole chapter on it, it can be a little easier. But for this one, I wrote a couple of things. First of all, this takes me back to primary purpose. What is my primary purpose here? Because the whole idea is we're not supposed to endorse or finance things because it's going to divert us from our primary purpose. So, again, what is my primary purpose in any given situation, and am I following it? I wrote down, it kind of goes back to the whole idea of minding your own business. It's, you know, when you're endorsing, if OA were endorsing a product or funding things, it allows all these issues to come in, and then we forget to do what we're supposed to do, right? Which is carrying the message. It's the same thing with me. Anything. if I'm getting away from what I'm supposed to be doing, it distracts me, and it gives me, well, for starters, it gives my disease an area to flourish, because my disease is like, ooh, now we can gossip, and now we can do this, and then before you know it, I feel guilty, and I feel shameful, and I feel angry, and I'm eating, because that's what I do. If I feel, you know, all these crazy feelings that come up inside, I eat them. That's what I do. So one of the things, another thing that I wrote that this tradition reminds me of is that I don't need to buy other people's love or affection. The whole idea of endorsing a product or financing something or lending your name to this product is kind of this idea of there's some credibility to the OA name, and we're gonna lend it to this other product to help it. You know, like you kind of think of Oprah. She's going to put her name on a book, and everyone wants to go out and buy it, right? So it's kind of like in my personal life, I don't have to buy things for people or do things for them in order to get their love and affection. I don't have to do that. That diverts me from my primary purpose, which is really getting to know someone on a personal level. You know what I mean? It's like, I used to be myself. And if we get along, great. You know, all the better. And then we have a more genuine relationship. It doesn't get screwed up by that idea of, oh, I lent them money, or, you know, I bought them things when we went places, or, you know, that kind of thing. And then just kind of the idea of keeping it simple, staying focused. Another thing that this kind of helps me out with is I find that, am I still okay? 1 year left? Oh, I'm not okay. I find that I have a lot of opinions on a lot of things. And so I find at work, I will have a better time getting along with people, which is kind of the whole idea of the traditions, is getting along with other people. If I don't feel the need to push my opinions on people, I don't have to endorse a particular product. I don't even have to endorse OA. You know what I mean? It's like I can live it. I can share my experience, strength, and hope, and I can try and be that better person that program makes me become. But I don't have to push OA on people. I don't have to push any particular product. I just find my life runs smoother when I don't take it upon myself to make anything else successful, whatever it is, you know. Yeah, I guess that's pretty much it. Let me make sure I don't have anything else. These are guidelines. They're not rules. There's no right or wrong way to do any of the traditions. As a general rule, I find that if I consult them, I'll make a better decision. You know, but depending on which often, I mean, I'm a lawyer, I can make an argument for either side. Bring it on, right? So I can often bring a tradition and say, ah, but what about this one? You know, I can go back and forth. But at the end of the day, if I consult these traditions and I kind of consult with my higher power and look at my conscience, what's the right decision to make? I guarantee you it will be a better decision than if I just bulldoze right through and just do whatever comes to mind. That's a guarantee. And within the tradition and with autonomy comes that idea that I can be wrong. I will be wrong. It's okay to be wrong. I learn from that. And then next time maybe I'll make a better decision. Or not, in which case I learn again. You know what I mean? So I think that generally speaking, I really like the idea of applying the traditions to my life. It makes things go a little smoother. But that surely has been my 1 minute. So I'm just going to stop and pass it on. Okay, for sharing. For James, you're sharing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to turn the recorder off because we won't record the shares.
So now is